This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
A 77% plunge.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. Bank of America got walloped in the last quarter. The second largest U.S. bank has just released its earnings, and profit fell by 77%. Net income and net revenue are down, too. The Bank of England has a $100 billion solution to the credit crunch. It's going to let banks swap mortgage-backed securities for treasury bills. The interbank lending market has particularly suffered in recent weeks. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
The Fed has been doing something similar for months, but the Bank of England's plan is more significant. The bank says it will issue at least $100 billion worth of new government bonds. The bank will then swap these bonds for the mortgages, which the commercial banks can't sell. With those mortgages off their books, it's hoped the banks will then feel free to lend and borrow again. This is an about turn for the governor of the Bank of England. He'd wanted the commercial banks to suffer more pain for reckless lending. Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank.
The governor had his head in the clouds, and he's actually looking around the real world, and he's seeing that there is a problem and that the bank has an obligation to try and sort that problem out.
He says the credit crunch is now beginning to bite in Britain. The UK may be 6 months behind the US, but he says we're on the same rocky road. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Two reports due out this week on the housing market aren't expected to be rosy. The National Association of Realtors will release its March figures on sales of previously existing homes tomorrow. On Thursday, the Commerce Department announces the numbers for new home sales last month. Meanwhile, another gloomy survey by corporate economists. From New York, Marketplace's Jill Barshay reports.
In the latest April survey, 109 industry economists say they're pessimistic about their companies. In some cases, the gloomiest they've been since the 1990-91 recession. Ken Simonson runs the quarterly survey for the National Association for Business Economists.
I think this survey suggests that we have not yet passed the low point in the slowdown, that not only was the first quarter weak, but companies are getting more cautious about the second quarter and the year as a whole.
Simonson says companies are getting hit with higher commodity costs, but their economists don't think they can jack up prices right now with consumer demand drying up. That means lower profits. These economists say neither lower interest rates nor investment tax breaks are much help. In New York, I'm Jill Barshay for Marketplace.
Wall Street rode out last week on a high. That led the market in Japan today to rally to its highest close in 2 months. Here in the U.S. on Friday, the Dow finished up 228 points to 12,849. The Nasdaq finished up 61 to 2402. And the S&P closed up 24 to 1390. Oil's trading at $117 a barrel. The Beijing Auto Show opens today, and the Chinese government is asking automakers to increase their fuel efficiency. That's at the same time the Chinese car buyers are demanding bigger cars. Sales of SUVs in China were up 38% in the first months of this year. Luxury cars up 30%. A report out today says capping greenhouse gas emissions may not be as hard on the U.S. economy as critics are claiming. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton explains.
The Environmental Defense Fund calls its report the broadest economic assessment to date on cutting greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. The environmental group combined the findings of different models ranging from the Department of Energy to MIT. And what it found was that the cost of setting up a cap-and-trade program to prevent the worst effects of climate change really isn't that high. Nat Cohan authored the report.
If you bring this down to the household level and you look at the projections on consumption, these models say the overall cost of capping greenhouse gases for the average American family is going to be less than a penny per dollar of income over the next two decades.
Cohan says critics make the mistake of thinking households will consume the same amount of energy no matter how much it costs. The more realistic scenario, he says, is that households will cut their energy use or install more efficient devices if prices rise, adding just a few extra dollars a month onto their electricity bills. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report this Monday, April 21st on marketplace.org. The Labor Department kicks off its teen summer job safety campaign today, but it may be a moot point. This summer is expected to be especially bleak for teen job seekers. Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
Typically, about a quarter of teens get jobs in food service and a quarter in retail, but those numbers are expected to change a lot. The employment rate for teens could hit a 30-year low this summer. John Challenger is with employment consulting firm Challenger Gray & Christmas. He says teenagers are at the bottom of the employment food chain, so they're the first ones to get bumped when things tighten up.
Like other discriminated groups, they face tough times when it comes to finding jobs because they just don't have many skills.
The jobs that don't require highly skilled workers are getting a lot more competitive, says Gary Chason, a professor of labor relations at Clark University.
We're going to increasingly see laid-off workers, particularly from the manufacturing sector, competing for those jobs and probably getting some preferential treatment.
But wait, won't teens have an edge because they're willing to work for less money? Chason says no. He says the tight job market means many service sector employees will settle for less than they earned last year. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
The boss will see you now.
Time again for Conversations from the Corner Office. If you've ever been in the market for a used sofa or a used car, you've probably cruised the classified ads on Craigslist. The Unadorned website is the largest provider of classified ads in any medium. It gets about 30 million new ads each month, but it only charges for about 6% of them. Craigslist likes to think of itself as a public service rather than a business, and that's got profit-minded classified services up in arms. Marketplace's Kai Rizdell caught up with Craigslist CEO Jim Buckmaster to ask him about that.
If we went to the newspaper industry and asked them what they thought of Craigslist, they would probably respond with something that you can't say on a public radio program. What do you say to criticism that Craigslist gets, that it's taken the life out of the newspaper industry by cutting so sharply into classified ad sales?
Well, certainly we're Internet classifieds in general, and Craigslist in particular, are one of the array of challenges that newspapers face. As far as the financial struggles that some newspapers have had, I noticed that the publicly traded newspaper chains seem a lot of them to be carrying an enormous debt load left over from M&A activity. To my eye, that's as much an explanation for any financial woes they have as certainly challenges posed by the Internet.
Who's your competition then?
Believe it or not, we don't really think in terms of competition. In our eyes, we're trying to perform a public service here such that other companies to us don't appear as competitors. Classifieds is an enormous space in any event with thousands of companies offering service both online and off. Basically, we just don't have time to worry about what other companies are doing.
Whether or not you choose to use the size you have to make substantial profit, you and the founder of this company, Craig Newmark, have outsized influence just because of how big this organization is on the Internet. What do you intend to use that influence for?
Well, I think our primary influence is providing free classified ads to people to use to get everyday stuff done. I mean, we literally get emails from people who have found their spouse and their job and the place they're living and their furnishings and their car or bicycle and a lot of their friends. In other words, they basically have assembled their entire lives off of Craigslist, all for free. To us, that's a pretty broad calling, and we don't feel the need to find some other activity to engage in as far as the site's concerned.
Jim Buckmaster is the chief executive at Craigslist. Jim, thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Today in Ghana, the UN Secretary General talked about the effect biofuels are having on food prices around the world and how they could set back world anti-poverty efforts. Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan says lots of people once thought biofuels were going to save the planet.
I think of it as that movie, I Am Legend, where it starts out with a vaccine to cure cancer, then at the end wipes out most of the planet and turns almost everyone who's left into a flesh-eating zombie. Not quite what they bargained for. Mm-hmm. And the thing with ethanol and biofuel is that was supposed to be a way to cure the United States' what President Bush called our addiction to oil without anyone having to sacrifice anything. You're not raising taxes, you're not driving smaller cars, you're not being more efficient. And, of course, it turns out it's taking so much of the world's crops that it's run up the cost of food all over the world and has not succeeded in any visible way, at least in the United States, in holding down the price of oil.
So it's kind of like taking a pill for a diet or using a machine that's supposedly going to tone you without your having to do any work. What would have been a better alternative?
Well, in hindsight, what my children would call a big honking gas tax, where you would have put a fairly substantial tax on gasoline, and then because a lot of people really can't afford that, you flow it back to them in the form of an income tax credit. And that way we'd be paying the tax to ourselves instead of paying what is now the largest transfer of wealth from one society to another. And many of the oil producers are not exactly friends of the United States. So we're helping fund the worldwide campaign against us. Mm-hmm. And I think we would have been a lot better off with a gas tax.
What do we do now that we've become more dependent on this ethanol? How do we turn back and change directions again? Is it possible even?
Oh, it's definitely possible. Is it going to happen? It probably wouldn't happen. The idea of ethanol is not a bad idea if you made it out of garbage, something that's already there that you don't have to grow. The idea of growing things to make them into ethanol, it didn't seem to make any sense when I heard about it, except it made political sense. And again, it's not only President Bush, it's also the Democrats, because you didn't see them lining up and saying, you know, we'd rather have a gas tax.
That's Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan in Los Angeles. I'm Lisa Napoli. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.